Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 450 of the JV Club as we ring in 2022. Very excited to have a nice, even exciting number to begin this fresh new year. I am sort of still recovering from the reality of us having to postpone the entirety of Sketchfest for an upcoming date to be announced. What can I say? Omicron wants what it wants. Anyway, I'm so sorry to not be seeing some of you this month. It's a very strange feeling. Last year, of course, we did not do Sketchfest at all, but we knew we weren't going to do it. So this was a rather abrupt decision that we were forced to make, and normally, I would be in San Francisco today. So for anybody else whose schedule has been disrupted, I want you to know I empathize deeply. And I hope everyone is staying safe out there as we roll through this next development. So happy to be coming into 2022 with my marvelous guest, Bonnie Gordon, now a new friend, connected to us by our mutual friend Q. Shout out to Q. I think it's a really fun episode with some very positive energy that is going to put a smile on your face and maybe even inspire you. All right, everyone, be well. I will talk to you next week. So we've established that we're not going to be showing video. That being said, again, I do want to say, I feel like I'm seeing some, in particular, bedding that I can't tell what's happening other than that it just looks like it's maybe a galaxy of joy. But it's, I don't know if that's...
My bedspread is a paint splatter.
Oh, I see a treble clef.
Yeah, when you make sense of the paint splatter, it turns into music notes and a treble clef. And
yeah,
it's colorful.
I said that like I was in
whimsical.
An escape room.
Yeah, I was like, we found a clue, a treble clef. Double trouble.
Yeah, I got real into it. I love an escape room, so I guess it's not surprising that I would have that same response.
My God, I love
them.
I've done them by myself. Like, I'm that person.
Oh, that's
that goes
amazing.
By myself.
Okay, that makes me very happy because I've not taken that plunge. Do you do it by yourself? So you do it by yourself, like, I'm going and whatever team I get stuck with.
No,
they better be great.
By
or you're like, I'm going in this room. I'm buying out
I'm
this
like,
room. Or it's like, they're like.
Well, yeah. I used to, years ago, I used to date someone who worked for like an escape room company. And so I would go there, you know, after, you know, waiting for him to get off work. And if he had like a last minute game planned or something to where like, oh, I can't leave yet. It's going to be another hour and a half. I'm like, great. Put me in this room by myself.
Great.
Yeah. And I'll solve them by myself.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So how did you start doing, as you know, this is my all escape room podcast.
We're starting, right? Yeah. I was like, did
oh,
we start?
Oh, we are fully
in.
This
is
in. We're in. I just don't do any kind of intro because I do that on my own later.
Great.
And okay. I like to jump in midstream.
Awesome. Hi, everyone.
So,
I'm here.
No, don't you dare. Don't you dare make it formal. This is like, somebody just dropped in.
Oh,
in
yes, I was in the neighborhood and was walking my cat in the neighborhood. And
this is my question for you is vis-a-vis escape rooms. Did you start going to escape rooms like when escape rooms sort of first came to the scene? I'm not saying I understand that there were escape rooms that were around, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah, but when did they come to the scene?
When they kind of became more ubiquitous. Did you start going to them right away? Or, and I'll give you my example, were you like me, which is to say, I love puzzles, but I also was very sure that I would get claustrophobic and freak out because I didn't know exactly what. When you hear the words escape room, you think that it's going to be like a clock is ticking, like horns are blaring, zombies are coming at you. And certainly you can do those kinds of escape rooms.
I was about to say, I've done those.
But with all three of those things happening. But I didn't, and I have that thing where, and as I've gotten older, it's gotten better, but I would have this anxiety about like, I don't want to be trapped somewhere. And it's, I don't even have really claustrophobia in the most typical sense, but certainly feeling like I can't leave a place no matter how big or small is an uncomfortable feeling for me. So, so I was like, I don't know why I would do, why can't I do puzzles like without that pressure? And then finally I did one maybe a year or two into when they were starting to pop up everywhere. And because some other friend of mine who was like far more anxiety than I was like, you'll be fine. It's totally fine. And I did it and I felt very sheepish, which, you know, let's not punish ourselves for our anxieties.
Look,
but I did
fine.
Feel sheepish.
You know,
and
everyone feels bad sometimes and that's okay.
That's right.
Sorry, that was horrible.
In a
that
great
joke
way.
Wasn't that joke was an ew.
Ew, it was an ew.
Okay, I'm done. I'm done.
You.
I'm done. I'm done.
Oh, you better go on the lamb.
I'll stop ramming these jokes down your throat.
Oh no, they're still
happening. Oh, it's still happening.
Okay. So okay. That wasn't you. You jumped in. You jumped into the deep end of the escape room.
I did. And well, once I did one or two, I was kind of hooked because again, like you, I love puzzles. I love solving puzzles. Also, surprise to anyone who knows me, which that was sarcasm, I'm sometimes very controlling. So when I get to an escape room, delegating tasks. And I'm also, but here's the thing. I am really good at puzzles. I'm really good at solving things. Yeah. Now I'm probably jinxing myself for the next escape room I'm in, and where I'm just like, well, I should never have, ramped myself up and raised the bar for myself. But I love doing escape rooms with like small groups, like one or two people max, like with
me. When it's too many people, it's rough. You get so unfocused.
Yeah.
And I feel like and I also have the desire to. I think I was a kid who, as an only child, absolutely, and as an Aquarius, if you don't mind me saying, absolutely, like, believe in democracy, but also felt very comfortable being the, like, benevolently, like, okay, we all agree that, like, no one's better than the rest, right? But we all have our gifts. Is it helpful if I help us get organized?
Exactly.
And, like,
the same way.
The more pressure there is, the more you're like, oh, this is very Felicia Day of me also. Like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm yelling at people. This is not good. Like, this is not where my heart goes at all. I'm not abusively yelling at people. I'm excitedly like, oh, wait, guys, hold on a second. And then I'm like, oh, no, that's intense.
Escape rooms, I need to bring out the best and the worst of us.
It's so much a roller coaster for me over an escape room of I will overcompensate for those qualities by backing off and just making jokes about myself for like 5 minutes, which also doesn't help anyone. So it's really like a roller coaster of like, I'm raising my voice. Hey, guys, let's ask Lawrence, the skeleton over here.
Well,
y'all still like me, right?
You know, you said you're an Aquarius. Going with the horrible ram jokes, I'm an Aries. So I'm in an escape room, I think I'm goat. Uh-huh. Okay, I'm done. That's the last one. I swear that's the last one.
I really hope not.
I'll work on it. I'm coming up with things in my head as I go. But, as I get into an escape room, I'm like, okay, I know I'm good at solving puzzles. I know I'm good at, not even just keeping everything organized, because honestly, my life and my head and everything is chaos, the ADHD, but I'm really good at hyper-focusing too when I...
Yes.
And when I get into escape room, it's like, whoop, escape.
Yes.
Hyper-focus on escape. So,
yes.
And I'm also really good at like kind of, not thinking just out of the box, but like picking up little things that others are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's not as, I feel like, we're both in creative fields, and so we kind of see things a little bit more... colorful, a little bit more out of the box, not so, black and white. So, you walk into an escape room and you're trying to find different clues and, you might miss something and it's like, no, let's try it this way and see if that works. And 9 out of 10, that's what they're trying to get you to do. They're trying to make you think.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I just love it because it gets your brain pumping.
No, it does get your brain.
Look,
brain
I think, do brains pump? Yeah, they pump.
Brains pump. I say brains pump. They throb. They pulse. And also, and they fire, there's firing, there's synapses, there's sparks. I sometimes feel like, and I have a couple of friends who are very much the same, and so we'll end up doing two back-to-back escape rooms because the first escape room kind of feels like a warm-up.
Yeah.
And then by the end of that escape room, you're like, okay, now I'm firing on all cylinders. I need to do another one to take advantage of this. Like, I need to ride this
wave.
Oh, my
dear. I do, like, two or three in a row every time. Because
okay, we are definitely going to have to do an escape room together.
Janet, why has this not...
We have to bring this full circle.
We have not...
Yeah.
And honestly, it's so funny because you've been on my radar for so long, and I feel like I've known you for so many years, but we've actually never met in person.
I know.
And I was like, oh, yeah, Janet.
Surprised.
I love Janet. Yeah. And then I'm just
couldn't
like.
Couldn't be less surprised that we're already talking like we've known each other forever.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, yeah, Janet surprised. And I, we do escape rooms on Tuesdays, like.
Yeah. So, okay. And then this is my last question about escape rooms.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
We don't know. This is an escape room podcast, right?
It's an escape room podcast through and through. Do you have types of puzzles that you are more scared of than other? Like, because I definitely have puzzles where I'm on a pretty good roll in there, and then I realize what kind of puzzle it is, and I have this daunting moment
math. You know, yeah,
that's where I'm going with this, yeah. And I don't want that to be true. And I will say that when I end up being the person who facilitates solving a math puzzle, I feel better than I ever feel any other time in life, because it does feel like, if it's a verbal puzzle or if it's like
a rhythm,
I'll be like, of course I was able to help with this. Like, and I'm not saying that I'm so brilliant, but it's more a way of like being down on yourself, honestly. It's more a way of being like, oh, I can't celebrate this because this is something I already know I'm okay at.
Right.
And then similarly down on yourself when you're like, oh, someone else is going to have to come in and clean up because I can't do these math puzzles. And if you push through that and you're a person who is instrumental with others in solving that puzzle, the high that comes from that is like extraordinary.
100%. I feel like math and science puzzles always kind of make me panic for a second, but then I power through. I actually just did an escape room. So I was in Vegas not too long ago for a little like Comic-Con pulp culture.
Yeah,
event.
Yeah.
Whoa. Words. And I found out they had a Star Trek escape room in Vegas. And I went, well, obviously I'm doing
it's
that.
Your
and it was
duty
just me and one other person. Actually, you know, our mutual friend Q.
Yes, was indeed. With me. No, listen, I would love to do a puzzle room with Q too, because I feel like he would be like, I've already mapped out this entire puzzle. I've taken in everything. I have a photographic
memory. He's kind of a
memory.
Genius, but you know what? In escape rooms, I will say this, I still take control. And in fact, so we did it just the two of us, and the difficulty was 9 out of 10. So it was a very difficult room.
That's rough.
And
they know the Star Trek nerds are extremely smart and empathetic, and like they'll get through it. So,
well, and it's also
and
a room that you need to do with a few
10.
More people. Like when I say he and I were running back and forth, trying to like looking at something and then running into another room and then looking. Okay, it's like call out these out in order. Yeah, so you kind of need
that
a
is
few
a lot.
More people. But we did it. We did solve it, and it was so much fun.
I love it.
Shout out to Escapology in Las Vegas. They have different themed rooms like Scooby Doo, and we didn't get to do multiple ones, which is what I tend to usually do. But and it's funny because I, especially with the Star Trek room, I was like, oh no, I'm taking control of this, and
yeah, you got to get.
I am delegating tasks, even though we're only a crew of two people. We will get out. We will save the ship.
You did, and you did.
We did.
Let's talk about some other stuff.
Okay.
Let's take you back. Let's go back to you as a high school student.
Right. Is this a therapy session? Are we going?
It is 100% a therapy slash comedy slash it can go wherever we want it to go session.
High school is actually pretty great. High school was good. Let's not let's go no further than that.
Uh-oh,
well,
really?
Let's skip elementary.
Yeah, we don't have to go back. We don't have to go back. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, via my podcast, life starts at adolescence, apparently, because that's what I want to talk to people about.
Sure.
So you can just gloss over.
I was a nerdy kid. Let's go. I got stories.
I mean, I feel you. Like, what was your social awareness of yourself as a teenager? Like, did you identify as a nerd? And did you have likes that were in sort of pop culture that helped define that? Because, you know, some people are like, oh, I'm a nerd, but like, I'm a nerd in the way of like, I'm in the chess club.
Right.
I write on the school paper.
Discovering
and
it
I
later.
Love musicals. Or it could be, I'm a nerd in the like, I play football, but I could recite every single doctor forwards and backwards and every companion. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you fit into all that?
I
looking at the TARDIS behind you.
Right. I discovered theater and music at a young age. And that's where I found my niche of these are my people. And it was something I was good at. Like, I wasn't really good at anything. I was we all say we were like the awkward kid, you know, whatever, growing up. But when I say like I walked funny, I'd like when I was really young, I had braces on my legs. I had the headgear on my teeth. I had like the bottle cap glasses.
You had all of the physical manifestations of what people get bullied for.
Exactly.
Happening all at once.
So that happened.
That's rough.
And it's fine. But then I discovered that I could sing and I went, oh, this is something I can do. And then I discovered theater and I was like, this is a thing. I grew up in Louisiana, so there wasn't a lot of the arts wasn't as discoverable as it is in some like larger major cities like LA. You know, I feel like theater's everywhere for kids. And
right.
So growing up like on a bayou, I was like, wait, there's a thing where I can get up on stage and people will laugh at me, but not at me, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes.
So, and that's
control.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. And also I discovered at an early age, I Love Lucy and the Carol Burnett Show, and realized like, oh, I could be the funny one. And that's when it kind of clicked. Like I started mimicking, like doing voices, doing impressions.
Yes.
But then I was also a very avid reader, and that's where I discovered fantasy. Like at a very young age, started reading Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, like in third grade. I would run around my room as Bonnie Baggins with my little butter Aww. Knife as my sting.
Oh.
Loved anything fantasy. I was the kid that had a giant wizard painted on their wall.
Okay,
and it was not great. It was a scary looking old man. Like when you walk into my room, there's a scary old man with his arms outstretched with lightning bolts in his eyeballs. And like friends would come over to my room and be like, what the hell? I'm like, it's a wizard. And they're like, it looks like a creepy old man, like in your bedroom. So
wait, let's pause. Okay. I got to pause.
Okay.
Who painted it? Was it like a pre-painted, like a, you know, a thing? What do you call it? Like a thing you could stick on?
No,
your,
no, no,
yeah.
no. There was a,
or like a,
there was a
this?
Boy I had a crush on that we hired to paint.
God.
He was an artist.
Amazing.
And painted the giant wizard on my wall. And again, you know, he was also young, so I'm sure he's.
I hope you have pictures.
I'm
of
sure.
This still.
I wish I did. I need to find. Oh, I need no. to like look into my archives. They're probably all burned, by like evil wizard eyeballs. But I also had the unicorn figurines, fairies, leprechauns, trolls. I had so much. My room looked like. You would walk into the Shire. I had like vines around my bed and
how love, but also like, let's pause also for a moment to say, okay, three things. Number one, just give me the actual town or small city in Louisiana.
Lafayette, Louisiana.
Okay,
well, technically,
right.
Breaux Bridge as well. Breaux Bridge, Louisiana. That's where I grew up a lot. My parents were divorced. So we were back and forth, but Breaux Bridge, which the bayou was in our backyard, the Bayou Teche.
Okay, great. And then second of all, do you have any siblings?
I have two younger sisters, so I was
an
embarrassment
to
them.
Two younger sisters. All right. And you were an embarrassment.
Poor Allison, you know, the middle sister, you know, she'd always, you know, they'd be like, oh, you're Bonnie Gordon's sister. She goes, yeah. Like, you know, she had to just kind of live, not like in that shadow of just me being a performer and like wanting to be in the spotlight all the time, but also, oh, you're the sister. Your sister thinks she's like a fairy or something. You know, she had to live with that. I was an embarrassment. I'm
okay,
so sorry,
younger
Allison,
sisters.
If you're listening. She's not listening.
Well, we have a surprise for you, actually. Allison, could you come in here for a moment? Okay. Next, and then my third question is, these are cool parents, right? Who sort of give you free rein to kind of create this world in your room.
Yeah, my dad thought it was a little weird and didn't understand it. But my mom was just kind of like, you know, she's reading, you know, she's smart.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So,
she likes someone who was going to, we're going to commission him to do a piece.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
A wall piece.
If he's listening, I apologize as well.
He
was like one of my first real crushes that wasn't Peter Pan or Jim Carrey. You know, he was like my first real person.
Yeah. That guy doesn't have a sense of humor about his early work, I mean, if he's like, I peaked at Bonnie's Wall. Like, I never, my art went downhill after Bonnie's Wall Wizard.
Oh, boy. No, if that was his peak,
so
then he needs, then I apologize. I don't know where he is now. But no, it was, it's one of those.
I mean, vines, how creative and wonderful.
Yeah,
like,
I got
that sounds
really.
Like, it seems like other friends would come in and be like, why can't I have this room?
You know, they were more into they wanted to come over and play like Nintendo and different, you know, video games and different things like that. Yeah. But I was just like, hey, you guys want to check out the new album to Lord of the Dance? And they're like, no, Bonnie, we don't. I'm like, it's really cool. When you go to sleep, you can imagine leprechauns dancing around. They're like, no, Bonnie, we're good. So
that's so charming. Come on. That's a great kid right there.
My first crush was Peter Pan, and I was 100% positive he was real. Still not convinced that he's not. Okay. And I used to keep a bag by my bed in case he came to take me to Neverland because I didn't want to be in Neverland just in my pajamas. I wanted to make sure I had a toothbrush.
Smart.
change of underwear. Yeah, like very like non-lost grounded. Boy of me. Yeah, I was like, I was going to be very prepared.
Totally locked up in fantasy and also like very yeah. pragmatic with a, I was like, with a bag, like, a bindle if I'm gonna
be,
to go.
If I'm going
to
be stuck in Neverland, I want to make sure I look nice, but yeah. this pajama choice is not what I would go with. So I'm going to bring an extra, you know, like I packed like an old nightgown so I could look like Wendy, like in the bag and
so
a toothbrush and
like
some food rations because I don't know what they eat, you know?
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
The Peter Pan thing is so interesting. Just in that, like, I'm always interested in, I don't know, should I have been, maybe gone into child psychology? Possibly. But just all the different ways that our brains developed. And I'm also very interested in, like, romance and human sexuality and kind of mm-hmm. how those things play or don't play into, you know, the things we get excited about. And
sure.
Peter Pan's a great example of somebody who's like, you know, he's so androgynous and, you know, he's very boyish. Like in the cartoon, for example, he's very boyish. Mm-hmm. But still women play him, you know, on stage and stuff. And so he has this kind of neat, like, it's like sort of non-binary qualities to him that I think that are really appealing. And I would say also, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but that was one of the things that I loved about sci-fi and fantasy, mm-hmm. I think early on, was androgyny and was the sort of like, where like there, this isn't a traditional male-female scenario in almost right. any sense, you know, in a lot of storytelling. Do you feel like that was part of the appeal for you at all?
You know what? It's funny you say that because, you know, a lot of people don't know this about me because I mostly have just dated men in my life, but I do identify as pansexual, and I feel like that's probably a big factor in it of growing up with, you know, that fantasy and sci-fi influence.
Yeah.
And I would always have crushes on, like, I also always have crushes on very emotionally unavailable men, like Sherlock Holmes.
Oh,
and
sure.
like Data from Star Trek, you know,
yeah.
these are like
well,
the crushes
yeah.
that I
You're
had.
You're interested in there. I mean, those two.
It's an intellect thing. It,
absolutely. And there's something perhaps very clean about that.
Spock, that, you know.
That, yeah, yeah. No, totally. But look at these are iconic creations because they are kind of speaking to the same sort of human computer personality mm-hmm. That, you know, there's that's I absolutely agree with the appeal and of all of those. Like I see it and I felt it. I definitely was in love with a couple of different iterations of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, Sherlock
for sure.
Holmes.
Like,
well,
you know,
I also identify as a gray asexual, which a lot of people don't know. But because of that, like Sherlock Holmes is like an asexual icon. And
yeah.
growing up, I didn't even know that word existed. I didn't even know that word existed until way later in my adult life out here in L.A. And looking back, I'm like, no wonder I was just so mesmerized by someone who just didn't. It was all about intellect and. Yeah, but he had that also that witty humor and
mm-hmm.
yeah, so smart.
That intellect doesn't necessarily equal boring and it doesn't necessarily
right.
equal. Uncharming, and it doesn't
right.
necessarily equal not magnetic. You
also,
know?
Benedict Cumberbuns.
Oh, Benedict Cumberbuns? Benedict yeah. Cumberbatch? Are we calling him Cumberbuns just
I
for fun?
I call him Benedict
okay.
Cumberbuns.
I know that you know his name, so I shouldn't have
even
questioned that
do,
in any way, shape, or form. I apologize.
It comes out.
But he is a little cummerbund. Also, cummerbund is just a ridiculous word that
Benedict
I can't believe still
cake.
Exists. And mm-hmm. it's a still thing that you, still a thing you wrap around your waist. Yeah, he's a delight and a joy.
Right.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. Wonderfuls, when I found out Magic Spoon was going to give the JV Club a spin for their ads, to be honest, I literally screamed and clapped my hands with joy. I am already a very satisfied Magic Spoon customer, and I will happily vouch for their delicious cereal. I cannot say it enough. I love Magic Spoon cereal. It is every bit, and I mean every bit as good as all those cereals I loved as a kid and begged my dad to buy, but he wouldn't buy because they had too much sugar. But my friends, Magic Spoon does not have all that sugar and all those carbs. Seriously! In fact, it has 0 grams of sugar, zilch, like donut hole. But as delicious as a donut hole, especially the frosted flavor. My favorite combo is definitely mixing the chocolate with the peanut butter, which I thought I came up with on my own, but then I found out everyone does it. But honestly, I haven't met a Magic Spoon flavor that I didn't like. So if you're thinking about getting some, or maybe you've heard about Magic Spoon before and have just never gotten around to it, oh, Wonderfuls, this is your chance to make me look great to Magic Spoon so I can show my love to them on a whole new level. But more importantly, you will be on your way to guilt-free cereal munching. Also, I'm super lazy about ordering stuff online, but I order Magic Spoon on my phone and it takes like 30 seconds. So remember, it's 0 grams of sugar. It's like 140 calories per serving, which is nothing. It's 13 to 14 grams of protein and only comes to like 4 net grams of carbs in each serving if you track that kind of thing. It's also keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free. Yes, it is low carb, and a variety pack, which I definitely recommend, comes with 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. Love them all. So do yourselves and me a favor and go to magicspoon.com/JVClub for $5 off. And you can stop taking my word for it. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they will refund your money, no questions asked. But let me just tell you, you're not going to want that. That's why they're so confident. That's why they can offer that, because they know no one ever does it, because genuinely the cereal is that delicious. So remember, get your next delicious bowl of cereal at magicspoon.com/JVClub. Use that code JVClub to save $5 off. And thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Please come back. I want to talk about Magic Spoon more. This is shameless, but what can I tell you? I love Magic Spoon!
Hi, I'm Annabelle Gurrich.
And I'm Laura House.
And we're the hosts of Tiny Victories.
My tiny victory is that I sewed that button back on the day after it broke.
We talk about that little thing that you did that's a big deal to you, but nobody else cares.
Did you get that Guggenheim Genius Award?
We don't want to hear from you.
We want little bitty tiny victories.
My tiny victory is a tattoo that I added on to this past weekend.
Let's talk about it.
My victory is that I'm 1 year cancer free. But my tiny victory is that I took all of the cushions off the couch, pounded them out, put them back, and it looks so great.
So if you're like us and you want to celebrate the tiny achievements of ordinary people, listen to Tiny Victories.
It's on every Monday on Maximum Fun.
Okay, so this is all beautiful and makes a lot of sense. Musical and musical theater wise, were you also gravitating towards, when you could, the kind of fun, funny roles?
Yeah.
And were you getting those, or were people trying to impose other types of roles on you?
You know, I accepted from an early age that I was not going to be an ingenue. And I'm okay with that. I'm 100% okay with that. And I told my baby sister, Shelby, when she was in fifth grade, was auditioning for Cinderella, the play Cinderella at her school. And she wanted to audition for Cinderella so badly. And when she didn't get the part of Cinderella, she was devastated. And I told her, I go, Shelby, no one is going to remember Cinderella. That is the most boring character in the show. She got cast as the evil stepmother. And
fun.
I said, make this your own. Like,
yeah.
Make it big, make it loud, make it funny. And
yeah.
And she did it. And she was the one who got the standing ovation. So I'm like, I told you, like, I'd never want to be a Cinderella. I want to be a stepsister or an evil stepmother, because those are the parts that are just so much more fun.
Absolutely.
You get so much more creative freedom with. And it's the same with voiceovers. Like, when I send in auditions, I never really get cast as the ingenue character. I'm always like the wacky characters around the leads. And that's okay, too.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think that that's... If people haven't figured out yet, I mean, I understand, like, it's confusing, too, because, you know, we're sort of much, much, much less so now. But, you know, the further back you go, it seems, the more conditioned socially young women were to feel like they, if they wanted to be the center of attention, or if they wanted to be the star of a play or whatever,
you
that necessarily
for the lead.
You
audition
what, and
for
by the
Sandy
way,
in
the
Greece.
Lead is often, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at me. Do you think I got to play Rizzo? No, like I didn't get to play Rizzo. I played Sandy, and it was so disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
So there, that's a gross, like, poor me thing to say. But for anybody who's experienced, like, the opposite, which is like, oh, I'm sorry, you can't audition for the best friend because we have such socially constructed ideas of what the quote unquote lead looks like and what the quote unquote funny friend looks like.
Right.
That we're like you don't there's we're just pigeonholing everyone. Are there social benefits to being the cute one or whatever?
Right.
For sure, that are totally gross. And a lot of the time they end up shaping you into something you shouldn't be, or they end up making you feel like that's what matters about
right.
you and stuff like that. I can't really speak for myself because I've always been a total dork. So I've always every time I get close to getting the like hot, like cool lead, people are like, oh, I'm sorry, you're an idiot. We're going to need to go ahead and go a different direction.
We're going to have to recast you in something a little bit less.
That's right.
Less cool.
That's right. Also, you get very used to playing the mom and everything when you're tall as a young person. So I probably would have gotten cast as the evil stepmother because I looked, I would be noticeably taller than
and
everybody
you're,
else.
And you're a character actor. That's what you do.
I mean, that's the biggest compliment you could give me, Bonnie, quite honestly.
I believe it.
I love it.
I was also a speech kid, you know, like the speech and debate stuff in high school. I was a speechy. And my domain, what I dominated in was humorous interpretation, was very male dominated. It was like almost every finals round of every tournament, it was me and a bunch of guys most of the time.
Ugh, wow.
But I will say this, like I kicked major booty. I was like first in the state years in a row, like went to nationals.
That.
I was, duo, duet, oral interp, humorous interp, but humorous was my favorite. And I think what gave me an edge over a lot of the other performers was, a lot of the girls who competed in humorous was always doing like the pretty voices and like the cute,
right.
the cute ones. And I would go something completely crazy, like doing something like Alice in Wonderland. And you have to cut it down to about, I think, 10 to 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And my coach was like, well, how many characters do you want to keep in it? And I went, all of them. They're like, Bonnie, you can't do Alice, you can't do a 10-minute piece with all the characters. And I was like, well, I'm going to try. And I cut it down and I kept 16 characters.
That's
in it,
extremely 10 impressive.
Minutes. And I would just pop into like, I'm late. Like, oh, Curiosa and Curiosa. And it was like, twinkle, twinkle, little bat. How I wonder where. I like played all the different characters.
And how fun for the audience. I mean, how fun.
Alice in Wonderland is not funny, though. It's not.
Yeah.
And it's actually very, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Accelerated language. Mm. And
Yeah.
And I, like, almost every ballot I got back was like, this piece is not funny. Get another piece. First place, And I was like, well, until they start knocking me down for not being funny.
That sucks. That's like getting an Onion review. That's like getting a AV Club review. That's like, here are all the things wrong with this. And I give it an A.
Right.
Like, well, oh, thanks a lot.
It was my voices and like the way I would like make my body, you know, warp into all these different characters. That gave me that edge because I was so good at doing little characters and voices.
I didn't even know that was something that you could do in speech.
You would pop into all the different characters.
I didn't even know you could. I didn't know there was that much acting and theater that could be kind of shoehorned into speech stuff.
Speech was my jam. And it was all. I did not do debate. Yeah. I know I would be. I think I would have been good at it, but it did not interest me at all. I was like, I can't do funny voices. I can't I can't. Pop around and like jump around like a crazy character. I don't want to do debate. Unless I'm going in going, you can't handle the truth. I don't want to do
right.
it. Yeah.
Your honors, I declare.
Yeah, I do declare. I object, Your Honor. And they're like, Bonnie, this is not a courtroom. But I still object.
Sustained. Yeah. Sustained.
So yeah, with musicals, like you were saying, I got cast as like the crazy, wacky, fun roles, but also my voice is very low. I have a very loud belt. So I would always get like the brassy, loud characters.
All of that stuff tracks with, first of all, having red hair, but also absolutely the Lucille Balls and the Carol Burnetts. Mm-hmm. Those types of women who are just out there,
the Mae Wests,
not conforming,
as well.
The Mae Wests that are just out there not conforming to that sort of idea of femininity, yet also being capable of being very sensual and very sweet.
Definitely.
And very, all of these things. Like, I've said this before on the podcast, and to my friends who do not care about this, I really apologize to you, but I could go, I could talk for an hour and a half about Carol Burnett's performance in the movie Annie.
Me too.
So it is an Academy Award winning performance.
It is brilliant.
Off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
It is so good. And the like, that's really where you see comedic genius is when you're like, and Jim Carrey has it a little bit, but he got to access that more as his career advanced,
right.
And he was able to be more nuanced.
It was very caricature in the beginning.
In the beginning, I just dismissed him out of hand. It was like, that was the age I was in my life when he really popped. I was like, I'm sorry, I like the Kids in the Hall and Mr. Show. Like, I was very, like, alt comedy snob, and I had no time for Jim Carrey. And
I was then a later Big Train on, fan. Do you know Big Train? It's a BBC. It's a British. It was what Simon Pegg got started on.
Yes, indeed. And Nick Frost, I think, right?
Yes. Well, he would guest on a few times.
Okay,
and
there we go.
I think even, was it Catherine Tate also guested on it a few times?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
That show, that sketch comedy show, it's so niche too. Like, it's like such a weird brand of comedy, but that's what I love the cleverness of it. Yeah. Anyway.
But it sounds to me like you got Jim Carrey's genius and appeal, like maybe before I did.
Here's the
thing, though. I was very dismissive of him for so long, and now I'm like, oh, that was like, he's quite wonderful.
Go back and watch his old stuff, and I'm talking like the Once Bitten. Have you seen Once
Bitten?
Oh,
I love Once Bitten. Oh, no.
So,
I do love Once
Bitten.
Earth
Girls are easy.
You're right. No, Once Bitten, I didn't even think of him as being Jim Carrey.
I just
thought of him as being the star of that movie, and I loved all vampire movies. So
he was my first celebrity crush.
I loved it.
And
because
of
that's
those
a very
movies.
Sexy movie, too. That's a very, like, oh, I shouldn't. Am I allowed to be watching this right now?
I know.
Like, very, very fun. I've never heard anyone bring up Once Bitten, so I, once again, now we have that in common.
But then I think
hilarious.
He got pigeonholed into the caricature work.
The rubber face, like, his physical comedy.
Well, rubber
face.
Did you see Rubber Face, the movie Rubber Face?
No. Really a thing?
So that was his first movie ever.
No, you're lying to me right now.
Yes.
I feel like you're bullshitting me. Okay.
And it's actually really good. It's very hard to find. I think I have it on VHS because I'm that person.
And oh my God, I'm in shock right now Rubber Face is a thing he actually did.
It's a guy, or it could be Rubberneck. It's one of those two, but I think Rubber Face. But it's a movie, and it's young. They're like in high school, and there's like he's a stand-up comic, but he's not that good. And then there's this girl who is just like average looking, but of course she's like the fat one and the fun, you know, like she's like, it's like what we're talking about, the stereotype of like, she's not the
indeed.
Cool kid, but she's really funny, and she helps him with his act and like helps write the jokes and do all these other things, and then he delivers them. And then I think there's like this big thing where at the end, like, he can't speak, like he lost his voice, and so she has to go up and do the act, and then she kills it. And then of course you find out that he was faking the whole time because he wanted her to get up there and actually shine. I just ruined the ending, but I don't remember much of this movie.
Yeah.
But I do remember how good it made me feel that was like, you know, they were such, and it showed a very nice platonic friendship of a guy and a girl without any, like, you know, we're going to sleep together later after you make me laugh. Yeah,
right.
It was just really nice.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
No. Listen, I was going to say I've derailed, but this was never on a track.
There's like a three-hour podcast, right?
It could easily be. Cool. I am periodically checking on the time, so I'm going to try to keep it together for both of us, especially because I have to go to physical therapy. So, at a certain point, it will have to end. Also, I'm wearing a shirt that I did not realize, like, camouflaged in with the weird tapestry I have behind me.
You do look like a floating
I'm surprised
head.
You can even still see that I'm here. Maybe you thought I left the room, but deeply camouflaged.
Your voice, I'm just looking like, where's her voice coming from? Janet? Damn
That's
it,
right.
Janet.
Yeah. So did you have, as you were kind of falling in love with all this stuff and excelling at it as a teenager, but yet also being in Louisiana, now you did say that you won some kind of more, like you went wider with some of the competitions, so you were getting probably to travel a little bit with like state competitions and stuff and national or whatever. How realistic did you think it was that you could end up with a career doing this?
I had such big dreams and didn't really realize how ridiculous my dreams were. When I was, I think, 4 or 5 years old, and this is, again, when I was, like, the weird, awkward kid, like, cross-eyed, my legs were crossed, you know, I went to a doctor who was checking on my legs, you know, they were like, oh, we might have to break her hips, you know, to straighten her legs out, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I looked him in the eye and went, a movie star! And he went, and my mom was like, oh, no. Yeah. And then at 9 years old, I saw Phantom of the Opera for the first time. And that kind of changed my life and kind of changed the trajectory. And I went, I know what I want to do. I want to be a prima ballerina. Just kidding. Just kidding. That was never going to happen either. But no, I knew from the get-go that it was what I wanted to do. And I just didn't falter. And even, you know, every setback I've had, I've just kind of like picked myself up and kept going. Hurricane Katrina was a big wake-up call for me. So was going to college and Katrina happened and the state was pretty much devastated from
that. Yes, indeed. Yeah, of course.
And it was kind of my... It was like a cue for me to go, you know what? Like, if I'm going to leave, because I think my life could have gone in two different paths. I could have stayed in Louisiana, kept doing community theater, kept, you know, maybe taught kids, you know, children's theater, found a nice guy, settled down, house with a white picket fence. Instead, I was like, I'm going to be a nomad and travel all over and not find a home until later. And I think that was the right path for me. But I left Louisiana, worked for Disney World in Orlando for a year. And then,
a lot of great people passed through the doors of either Disneyland or, you know, Disney World. That's for sure.
I'm just saying, really, you know, you can say what you want about the mouse, but I do have fond memories of working there. And it did give me that little bit of extra confidence I needed to be performing outside of, you know, it was like a, you know, I was kind of a big fish in a little pond and then got thrown into a way more talent pool where I had to, you know, where there was a lot more rejection and I had to realize, okay, you know, and it was a lot of physical rejection. Like, your nose is too big. Your shoulders are too wide. You're this, you're that, you know, and I'm like, okay. I got cast in a show outside of Disney called Tony and Tina's Wedding, which is like a
comedy
very improv
famous
show. Yeah, it's a great show, dinner theater show. And then they transferred me from the Orlando cast to the Vegas cast. And so I just packed up my car, moved to Vegas because I call me adventurous, if you will. Didn't have a place to live. Didn't know anybody. Just like up and moved to Vegas at 21 years old. Worked in Vegas, did shows in Vegas, sang with a few bands. And that's when I really was like, okay, I'm doing this. This is what I'm doing for a living.
Okay. And then how long did you stay in Vegas before you nomaded elsewhere?
Not too long. I was there 2007, 2008. Worked the Star Trek Experience. I was one of the actors in that. And then that's when I came to L.A. for a weekend just to, like, see what it was like. You know, because I'm like, I'm so close. Let me just go to L.A. and see.
Sure.
And I walked into an audition of Second City for the conservatory. I was just like, let me give this a try because I loved improv and I loved, you know, sketch and everything. I'm like, I'm gonna audition for Second City. I'm right here. It's right down on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
Well, I think I just walked in. I don't know. Maybe I didn't. I can't remember. We'll say
it's
I just
a better
walked
story
in.
If you just walked in. I applaud.
I just
that.
Walked in with my suitcase and my little hat and went, let me audition for the conservatory. And I got in. They skipped me through the intro classes and put me straight through the conservatory. So that's when I moved to L.A.
That's another really big deal. That's so cool. And so you have had, now you've had the experience that other people like roll their eyes at and are like, ugh, you're the person that it really just happened for. Like,
but
you
not
didn't,
really. No, yeah. I mean, I worked my butt off and I still am. You know, everyone thinks with LA, you know, if you get like a, you know, a big role in a show or, you know, I'm very lucky right now to be in the new Star Trek Prodigy show. And everyone's like, oh, you must be, you know, doing so well, doing so that. Everyone doesn't realize the hustle you have to do in LA where, I mean, you're constantly auditioning. You're constantly working. I mean, I have four jobs, you know, to where, you know, when people are like, when's your next day off? I say like Christmas Day. And even then I might be working, you know?
Yeah. I totally get it. I mean, I couldn't get it any deeper than I do get it. No, it's very true. It's very true. I'm more relieved to hear that it wasn't like you just showed up at Second City and then you never ever had to go with me. But like, also, I knew as I was saying it that, first of all, I wasn't serious. But second of all,
I didn't.
Anybody who's been here long enough knows exactly what you said so articulately, which is, you know, there just isn't. Absolutely, somebody can just sort of fall into being on a TV show and their experience of Hollywood can be wildly different from somebody who moves right after high school and like buses tables for 10 years and then gets a job or whatever. It can look different, but it's kind of incredible how I feel like this business for better and for worse, will still stick it to you. Like, it'll still find ways to get in all the cracks. Even if you are like, I don't know, I just keep getting jobs. Like, it will still get in there. It can still warp you. And you have to still be on point with, like, yourself as a good human being. There's all kinds of ways.
The city of imposter syndrome, and it's the city
absolutely.
Of, you know, and I see a lot of my friends, you know, who have been hugely successful, but have still stayed humble and a good person. Yeah. And then I've seen the opposite of people that I've known that have gone off to huge successes and then have just written off anyone under them because, oh, you're not famous enough to hang out with me anymore. But then fame is so short lived to where then, you know, they fall back down in the ranks and then they realize they let go of all their true friends. I've seen it happen. Yeah. And I always say, you know, never forget who you are. Never forget your roots. Never not be kind. You know, this industry is so mean and so competitive that I feel like just being kind to others makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
And the imposter syndrome is so real that a lot of people are always like, oh, you're so confident, you know, or, you know, body positivity and this and that. And I'm just like, it is such an optical illusion. But man, the whole fake it till you make it, same thing with imposter syndrome.
Sure.
It's like, I want to show, you know, that side of myself that I am a confident person and I do believe in myself. But I mean, there are times when I just look in the mirror and go, what am I doing here? Why?
Sure.
I could just move back home and life would be so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. But I think it's great to share both of those things because, you know, there's little more motivating than like wanting other people to feel like they're okay or to feel like, I mean, I don't mean that in a people pleasing way, although that is a problem for me, but like
are we like mirror universe?
I mean, we may be, I think we very, very well may be, but you know, but nothing feels better than someone saying like, you know, Bonnie, you made me feel better about my own insecurities because, you know, I'm insecure about something that is other people are like, that's dumb. Why be insecure about? And then I saw you and you're being so successful at being this kind of person or looking this way or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it gave me the courage to ... Like, that is a very wonderful drug. And that is a very wonderful feeling. And so that is a huge motivator. And so the humility of both saying like, yes, I am doing it. And yes, I am celebrating my successes, but I also have all of these doubts that I still combat. That's the perfect recipe really for someone. Cause no one wants the role model who's like, well, I guess they're just perfect. Like no one can, you know, you can't hold on to that as an example the way you can, like this person overcame this, or this person is still walking through life, holding on to this thing, or, you know, that it's this constant journey and that it's not, you know, that it isn't like, oh, this, I flipped the switch and now I'm this, for better or for worse. That's just not how being a human being works. And the more we can share our struggles with people while also celebrating our successes, in i.e. don't downplay the things that you're great at and don't downplay the stuff that you're proud of, because, you know, then you're denying yourself and other people the rewards also. You know
what
I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's also, you know, I always tell people who want to move out here and, you know, oh, I want to move to Hollywood and, you know, become an actor or do voiceover and this and that. I always, the best advice I can give people is don't move out here or don't like get into this industry to find your big break. Don't do it for the fame. Don't do it for the fortune, because I guarantee you, you're not going to find it. And I mean, if you do, kudos to you, because I mean, wow. But do it because you love
it. It's pretty safe to say that's going to be an outlier situation.
Yeah. I'm just kind of like, look, you know, not all of us are Matt Damon.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure he would be like, you know, I had to do this. And
I know.
This
exactly. Well, it's true. I've heard his story, too. Like, you know, it's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same old tale as old as time.
No, for
but
sure.
I tell people, like, get into this industry because you love it and it fulfills you in some way. Because I'm okay with not ever having the fame or fortune. I'm okay with that. I mean,
but that stuff comes with its own, like, yikes moments as well.
Oh,
and
I'm like, really, am I going to be able to eat this week? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, my ultimate goal would be just to make a comfortable living doing what I love. And I think that's 100%. What everyone wants in life.
100%. And by the way, that's the other thing, is like the vast majority of people who are in this business are working it's like the equivalent of blue collar in many ways. Like,
yeah,
you're making not very much money. You're working very hard. And you're just trying to do what you love for a living, and
right.
that is the middle class of Hollywood is massive,
right?
And the upper class of Hollywood is teeny weeny.
Exactly. I mean, I property manage 3 buildings in North Hollywood just so I can survive out here.
Man.
You know, and that job is not fulfilling for me at all. But it also allows me to live in LA on an entertainer's salary, and
yep.
you know. But there's sometimes when I'm in the middle of a podcast, like right now, and I look and see that a toilet has exploded or, you know.
God bless. Yeah.
And that's what I deal with day to day. But I have to just put on the smile and, you know, be in the booth in the studio and be like, nope, everything's fine, and take care of it after. And
girl, yeah. I feel you.
Did your toilet just explode? I have a guy.
And full disclosure, I do live in one of Bonnie's buildings that she manages. So I'm going to need you to come over, drop everything, and handle this right now.
You laugh, but I'm really, whenever I have a vacancy, I put it out into my friend. I have so many of my friends and creative colleagues.
Oh, well, that makes it very
that
fun.
Live
of course
in my
you
buildings.
See, you turned it into something really positive.
So it becomes kind of like a creative commune.
I love it. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Are you feeling elevated levels of anxiety? Do you quake uncontrollably, even thinking about watching cable news? Do you have disturbing nightmares, only to realize it's 2 in the afternoon and you're up? If you've experienced one or more of these symptoms, you may have FNO, news overload. Fortunately, there's treatment. Hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of Troubled Waters. Troubled Waters helps fight FNO. That's because Troubled Waters stimulates your joy zone. On Troubled Waters, 2 comedians will battle one another for pop culture supremacy. So join me, Dave Holmes, for 2 doses of Troubled Waters a month. The cure for your news overload. Available on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I play a MASH game at the end of the podcast, which still takes a little bit of time. So
that's fine. I'm here all
if
day.
If you're comfortable with it, I'm very happy to jump in because I don't want to forget this category, which is, it's not so much, I want you to let go of the idea that you're property managing the building itself and that you're like cleaning people's toilets. That's not what this is.
Oh, I don't do that.
No, but this is, you do like own a building where you can populate the apartments with the people that you want to live there from any place in time. So give me 3 tenants or 3 people who live in the building who you were like, oh my God, I would love to have, like, I love to imagine Carol Burnett living next door to Lucille Ball.
Well, I will take Carol Burnett in a second.
So let's pop her in there.
Oh, Carol and I, we're going to have lunch every Thursday.
Great. Okay. Give me 2 more.
Mozart.
Great.
We're gonna have a wild building. Okay.
Great. I love it.
Okay. Oh, the pressure is on.
I know. I'm sorry. This is the extemporaneous part that also is very pressureful.
Oh, I'm like looking around my room looking for hints.
And that's a very normal response. Very normal response.
Jim Henson.
Great. Ugh, I want to move into this building. Now, that being said, I just realized that you only get one of these people out of the 3.
What?
So what? I know. Well, that's MASH. Have you ever played MASH? Mansion, apartment, shack, house?
Right.
You're going to get 1 from each category.
Oh, I remember this game. I was just like, are we playing Suicide is Painless? Because
This is this. And
I remember, at least I don't
play it in the way where I'm like, and now you have to give me 1 answer of something you hate. I will not do that. That being said, I'm going to use up the next category for more people who live in this apartment building because I'm really excited about this idea.
Okay. Oh, my. All right. Who else am I going to get? Oh, this is great. This is really good. You know what? I'm going to go with Andre the Giant.
Oh, wonderful.
Princess Bride is my favorite movie of all time. So,
oh, it's so good.
And I think he and I could be drinking buddies.
Love it. 2 more.
Okay. Oh, my God. You're killing me.
I'm so sorry. I know. I really am doing it too. Okay. But the problem is you're giving such good answers. Now I want to hear more of those answers.
Okay. Freddie Mercury.
Great.
We're going to do karaoke nights with Mozart.
Beautiful.
And let me think. I'm trying not to, like, be too obvious with, you know, like, all Star Trek actors and, you know.
Well, I appreciate that. But also, this is your game, so you can populate it however you want.
No, I understand. But.
this is our first fight.
Yeah, like, look, I understand, Janet, but I'm just trying to. Oh, you know what? Oh, yeah, let's bring her in this. Mae West, let's go.
Oh, great.
She's one of my idols.
Okay, next category, three. Foods that in this reality, perhaps it's something that you had once far away and you've never been able to get that. You're like, oh, I wish I could eat that every day. It could be used for that reason. Okay. This category can also be used for like,
favorite food,
I would eat,
or?
You know, I wish I could eat five watermelon in a row and not feel sick afterwards because I love watermelon. We're going to remove all negative ramifications from everything.
Just like favorite things to eat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Great,
right. That you're going to have when you snap your fingers in perpetuity. It's not the only thing you eat, but you can have it whenever you want.
Korean barbecue.
Great.
Beef bulgogi, to be exact.
Great.
I could eat that all the time. Love it. Chocolate-covered gummy bears.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, dear. Oh, bother. my grandmother's grilled cheese.
Grandma's grilled cheese.
Nana's grilled cheeses.
Great. Okay. Three books that you can jump into and you're not reliving the plot. They're just like, it's just a portal into those worlds where you get to hang out with those characters whenever you want.
Killing me.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so hard. Oh, gosh.
Sorry.
I mean, here's the thing. You know, as much as I want to go jump into The Hobbit, like, that's a lot of war happening. You know, like, you think of all the books that you love, and it's like, you know what? But if I can just say, like, The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings,
yeah, but
I'm just hanging out.
Shire.
I'm just hanging
in
the Shire. Yeah. I am Bonnie Baggins. Oh, I'm definitely going to the Shire. Going to, can I go? I want to go to Neverland.
Sure.
Can I combine the answer and be just all the land, Neverland and Wonderland together?
Answer? That is 100%. I appreciate you trying, but that is cheating all day long.
I mean, like Alice in Neverland? Okay, no. All right. as much as I am against the beliefs of J.K. Rowling, and I don't agree with her, and she's ruined a lot of the fandom for me, but
I'm not making any excuses for her in any way, shape, or form, but I will not be surprised in the least if that person has a real come to Jesus, and I'm using that as
a
non-religious person, but I just feel like there will come a time that person is going to go, I've been in a, like, part of my mind is broken for very specific reasons, for very specific reasons that may have to do with their own trauma.
100%
again,
agree.
Not saying it makes anything okay, but for, and I'm not saying people don't have to be responsible for their actions, thoughts and deeds, especially if they have a public persona that is ostensibly supposed to help support people, especially underdogs. All that being said, I just wouldn't be surprised if that person had some awakenings over time. I
really hope so. No.
I hope it happens.
I really, really hope so. Just because I feel like the world that she created helped so many people through their own trauma
no one can take that away.
And I feel like if she just realized how much bigger the world is and how some things that you believe it's okay to be wrong and it's okay to ask for forgiveness. And I hope that one day she does. So with that being said,
great.
I would like to go to Hogwarts.
Great.
This Hufflepuff wants to be by the kitchens and hanging out.
Love it.
The house elves.
Yeah.
Going on strike. We're going to form a union. It's going to be great.
I love everything about it. All right. We got some Shire. We got some Hogwarts. What's your third one?
Oh. Neverland. I was going to try and think of some sci-fi land, but really I'm just like, oh, man, it's all fantasy for now.
That's great. Okay, and now I'm going to pin you down on it so you don't have to feel like it's predictable because I'm doing the work for you.
Oh.
I'm going to give you the opportunity to have your character interact with three characters from any part of the Star Trek universe. So three characters from the Star Trek universe that your character from Prodigy gets to hang with. Yeah, it is.
I am the voice of the computer, so I technically get to hang out with everyone and interact with everyone.
Listen, if you want to blow this category by saying that,
No. I'm going to... Let me go. Well, Data is Brent Spiner's always one of my favorite. Data's always my favorite.
Love.
I will say Janeway, because not only do I get to share scenes with her, but she's my favorite captain. So I love her.
Love it. Love.
And let's go with oh man. You know, let's go with the OG Spock. Let's go, Spock. Right.
Love and
I also love the Doctor from Voyager. But we'll just
oh yeah. Okay. Grab a Picardo, this is great. This is great. Yeah. Okay. Next one, let's do three. Let's do some romance. Romance can mean whatever it means to you. Could be about like an intellectual romance, it could be about sexual romance, it could be about romance but no sex. Whatever you want it to be.
Understood.
Three characters, real people, fictional, any age, any era. Three characters that you would love to have sort of this alternate reality
Wesley.
Romance with.
I'm going to throw it out there right now. As you wish, all day, darling.
Wonderful.
Well, I'm going to say Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, let's get him in there.
Man. I don't want to say Jareth from Labyrinth because he was very toxic. Let's go.
Yeah.
But again, David Bowie. He was one of the people
very
I wanted.
Very androgynous, very dynamic.
I definitely wanted him in my building, David Bowie, but
yeah.
I had to go with Mae West.
Appreciate.
Okay. Let's go with Doctor Who.
Great.
All very intelligent, sweet.
Yeah.
Problem-solving men.
Absolutely.
Who will come to my rescue.
I love it. Okay, next category, let's do three places in our world that you would love to have a second home. And we're going to pretend that we can sort of TARDIS or teleport you there.
It's fine. I know exactly where. Scotland will be my number one choice.
Great.
Going back to my roots. Let's see. I love Scotland. Oh, man. Can I, have a house right in the middle of Stonehenge? I feel like that would be
sure.
Cool.
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll take Dublin, Ireland.
Great.
Basically, all the places I know that I can pretend to be a local.
Totally get it. Totally get it. And listen, these are I would love to live in any of those places.
Right.
Maybe not in the middle of Stonehenge, but I appreciate that sentiment. I love it. Okay. Final category.
You know what? Take away Stonehenge and put New York. Okay. I could go and like whenever I wanted see Broadway.
Also true. Also
and
true.
Also, you know, when they need me for a starring role.
To tap you, yeah. I'm sorry. The final category, three characters that you would love to play on stage, regardless of race, gender, size, age, anything. Three characters you get to play on stage.
Oh! Number one, Lady of the Lake from Spamalot. That role, I feel, was made for me.
Wonderful.
Love that role. Oh, man. You know, I was lucky enough to play her already, Miss Hannigan. I played it in a small theater, but I would love to do her again.
You would kill it.
And I took a lot of Carol Burnett's influence, of course. Oh,
love it.
And I feel like, there's so many good shows out there. Oh my gosh. Les Mis, but The Madam. I've played Eponine before. Again, you know, it's great playing the little ingenue, but I love playing the characters.
Great.
She's not a big role, but master of the house.
Yeah. It's great. Okay. All right. The final thing I need you to do for me is maybe just give me a word to describe how... Give me a word that
no,
helps...
No, take it back. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Okay. Mrs. Lovett. Yeah. Mrs. Lovett.
Okay.
That's a dream role. Right. Sorry. Take off Les Mis. Mrs. Lovett. I'm so sorry.
No, it's totally fine.
Okay.
Okay, Mrs. Lovett.
Now continue.
Yes. Okay. Give me a word that helps describe, again, that a feeling of like getting out of that, like solving a puzzle in the escape room or finishing the escape room.
Accomplished.
Great. Okay. I don't know why I asked you to do that because this is a lot of letters that I have to turn into a number. But one, two, three, four, five. Okay. While I do this, which is to let you know which in each of these categories you will end up with for your 100% guaranteed alternate
future.
Universe mash
perfect.
Life future,
I'm sorry.
Will you please tell people where they can find you, what they should be watching or listening to or both, all the ways in which they can enjoy more of the absolutely delightful Bonnie Gordon?
I will do this. Hello, everyone. My name is Bonnie Gordon. You can find me all over the interwebs at Bonnie Bell G. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok. I don't really do those, but I'm working on it. And YouTube, You can also catch out my comedy parody band, The Library Bards, at Library Bards everywhere.
I love this.
You can hear me on Star Trek Prodigy, the new Star Trek show, now streaming on Paramount Plus. It's lovely. You don't have to know anything about Star Trek to enjoy it, so please go watch it. It's so much fun. The animation is beautiful, and the story has so much heart. And I am currently in the process of releasing my own solo album. The Kickstarter is up right now. If you go to my social media, you'll find it. The title of the album is Con Artist. The whole idea of the album is jazzy with a touch of nerdy.
Love it.
So it is a solo jazz album with some nerdy covers as well as a lot of original music ranging from songs about Comic-Cons to ADHD to any other nerdy things that I want to sing about. So please, please, please check it out. It's really exciting. I'm trying to get to my last stretch goal, which will be a music video. We are currently almost to a bonus track on the album, which will be a duet with the legendary Grey Griffin. So please, please, please. Yes. We're hoping to do a duet.
Oh, man.
It's going to be hysterical, too. I'm writing the song right now, and it's going to be a homage to Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, wonderful. That is so well worth anyone's
written.
Investment. We got to make this happen, everybody. We got to make this happen. Okay, here we go.
All right, wait.
Here we go.
Give me my future.
Oof, there's a lot of good stuff in here. Yet I also loved all of your choices so much that I do feel a little sad that you couldn't have every single one. The first thing I'll say is, you know, look, you do have this building. You are going to populate it with all of these wonderful, wonderful people. Mm-hmm. One of these wonderful geniuses who get a chance to sort of coexist side by side in this building as tenants, as neighbors, as friends. I'm going to go ahead and say I believe all of these people will move in. These are just the two tenants.
Great.
Just
wonderful.
The first two tenants. Everyone else soon to follow. But for your first two tenants, you are going to have Mae West.
Yes.
And Jim Henson. Which is an amazing combination.
My goodness.
And is very wonderful.
Oh.
And I'm very, very glad.
My little
both.
Heart is so happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come up and see me sometime.
It's really something.
Kermit the Frog.
I was going to say, I wish I could do better impressions.
Oh, Kermit, please. My car's name is Kermit.
Piggy is a little more doable.
I have a little Chevy lime green Chevy Spark, and his name is Kermit.
Oh, no, it's Kermit. Mm-hmm. Piggy. Okay, so fantastic building happening there. You also have a house in Neverland where you can just go whenever you want.
Of course I do.
And I'm going to go ahead and assign you a house in New York City as well.
Perfect.
Not even an apartment, but a house. That's like a...
You know what?
Like
I'll take
like
a condo. We'll meet in the middle, and we're going to go see some Broadway together.
It's going to be fantastic. I can't go with you to see... You as Mrs. Lovett, but I guess you're probably pretty glad that you backed out at the last minute of Les Mis and assigned yourself that, because that is what you ended up with. So well done, you.
Look, I'm not a good cook, but I'm sure I can figure out some meat pie recipes, and...
It's great. Yeah. It's great. I will say that there is sort of a parallel between what your character on Prodigy, who they interact with, and who... you have this relationship with in real life, which is that your character has this sort of prolonged interaction arc plot with Spock. And then in real life, you have none other than Mr. Sherlock Holmes. So really enjoying that parallel right there.
I think it's quite
wonderful.
My future is so rich and lovely.
As rich as your grandma's grilled cheese sandwiches that you can have whenever you want at the snap of your fingers.
Oh, perfect. Every time I need a little bit of nostalgia, just...
Thanks for teeing that up for me. I really appreciate it, because that was the last category and it became a whole beautiful story. Bonnie,
that was
what
amazing.
A pleasure.
Janet, you!
I mean, I have to get up and leave for physical therapy right now it's at 1 o'clock.
I actually have a recording session
and you
at
have
1 o'clock.
A recording session at 1. So we'll be on our ways, but this was such a pleasure and a joy. I cannot thank you enough. Everybody, please check out all of Bonnie's wonderful projects. She has shown you not just that she is charming and wonderful, but also a very hard worker and extremely talented.
Thank
so
you.
Please support her. And I, myself, Janet Vorney, JV, will talk to you all next week on the podcast.
Thank you.
This show is produced by Julian Burrell and Christian Duenas.
And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.